I'm Nana van Tilburg for BizNews. The allegations of arms shipment to Russia have called into question South Africa's non-aligned position on the Ukraine conflict. The accusations have strained relations with the West, and there is a risk that South Africa's duty-free access to the US market could be jeopardized. The South African Reserve Bank has now also raised the alarm that the country could face censure due to its perceived closeness to Russia. And I have Jean-Jacques Cornish, a foreign and African policy writer, who is really tapped into the diplomatic community in South Africa to make sense of all of this. Just give us a little background. You've been covering foreign policy at the UN and England. What is your background apart from that you now write on foreign policy?
Well, I was London editor of the South African Press Association, and which sadly doesn't exist. In fact, many of the publications I work for don't exist. So maybe I like the Typhoid Mary of South African journalism. But I was London editor from 1975 and then correspondent to the United Nations for that for a period of 5 years, covered five General Assemblies and then a plethora of Security Council meetings because South Africa was taking a pasting on Namibia, you know, its illegal occupation of Namibia. Then I was in London until 1984 when I returned to become the assistant editor of the Pretoria News and the diplomatic editor for the, I think it was still the Argus Group, then became the Independent Group of newspapers. And I've been covering the diplomatic beat since then. In that period after the democratization and Nelson Mandela moving into the presidency, Linda, I could have lived abroad. I had invitations to travel from everybody. Everybody wanted to be our friends. Those were the sort of halcyon days. Fantastic. And I think I covered elections in something like 30 African countries. I traveled for the Independent Electoral Commission Electoral Commission for Sustainable Democracy in Africa, which was called ISA. It was originally set up to monitor the first South African elections and then became a monitor for the rest. So I've been working for them for years and then working for a lot of foreign outlets, Radio France, BBC. So, I live and breathe diplomacy. In fact, that's my, bread and butter.
Yep. What do you make of this South Africa, Russian, Ukraine problem that we seem to have brought upon ourselves?
Well, you see, the ANC believes they don't want to be bullied and told things, who to be friends with. And you can understand that. Don't tell us who to be friends with. We wouldn't presume to tell you that. And certainly John Blinken or Anthony Blinken, when he came here, said, we are not planning to do that. But there is, in fact, an embargo on Russian arms, and we did not. South Africa decided to abstain rather than vote in the United Nations General Assembly when it came to voting to condemn Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Now, that's very odd, Linda, and it really strikes me as odd because if somebody had, at the time I was at the United Nations, was during the apartheid era, the ANC and the Pan-Africanist Congress simply expected, as did the African bloc, that people would support the moves against the apartheid regime on humanitarian grounds, on legal grounds, on moral grounds. And, there could be no, anybody abstaining for any reason would have been absolutely repudiated by the Africans and by the ANC. So when they now take a position and we occupied the moral high ground under Madiba, in those honeymoon years, the rainbow nation that we were, we occupied the moral high ground. But suddenly this occurs, and we decide to not to vote, to abstain, and to see some merit in what Russia is doing. The feeling is that NATO is encroaching or moving too close to Russia, and so as though the countries like Ukraine have no right to choose their friends and their alliances. You know, Russia has divested itself of these countries, but is unable to control them. and should be unable to control them because they're independent countries. Russia, of course, is very, very fearful of the Ukraine for political reasons, but for important geographic reasons. You know, there are no mountains between Russia and Europe to the west of Russia. So that people like Napoleon Bonaparte and Adolf Hitler can decide to invade Russia and can simply move across the territory and move into Russia. Had there been mountains where Ukraine was, you know, Ukraine would have been safe. Russia would have been would have had a natural boundary that they didn't have. So they are very nervous about this. But the fact remains, they've invaded an independent country, and we as people, as Africans, with a, taking a moral stand on foreign policy, should really have condemned this, and we haven't. I mean, not the whole African bloc has not failed to condemn it, just some members, and we are one of them, sad to say.
Well, you very tapped into the diplomatic community in the country, and there was this spat between the US ambassador and so the South African government. What is the feeling among the diplomatic community about what is going on here?
Well, you know, the Europeans, for example, are concerned about our position. Some of the Africans say exactly what our diplomats are saying, in that nobody has the right to tell us who we may or may not be friends with. Well, that's one thing. And another thing is we believe that we understand, we mediated our way through what was, to all intents and purposes, going to end in tears and blood, and negotiated a limited or a partly bloodless transition to democracy. It wasn't bloodless by any means. There were many, many hundreds of people died. The fact is, though, we negotiated that, and we believe that you cannot negotiate with a country by holding a gun to their head. Well, if that is the case, then, you know, how do you negotiate with a country by simply invading and sending missiles into the capital city? So, you know, there's a double standard here. And the diplomats play diplomacy on this score very much. They're not going to condemn it. I mean, of course, if you speak to the Ukrainian ambassador, she's absolutely livid at what South Africa is doing. But the United States, you can't get them to say, this is going to affect the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, which gives free access to U.S. markets for African goods from countries that have the stamp of authority, stamp of approval by the United States, in other words, democratic states, and PEPFAR, the fight against AIDS, which is the United States, one of their most successful foreign policy initiatives. Incidentally, it was initiated by George Bush Jr. So interesting, not Bill Clinton. Anyway, so these are the two areas that we could take flak on. Linda, the most important thing is that on AGOA, on the trade one, which is what everybody's worrying about most, speaking to Willelian Schlapper when he was ambassador to the United States, and that's long before all this was happening, he was dealing with a bipartisan feeling, Democrats and Republicans, that South Africa was getting just too much out of AGOA. Many of the countries, Lesotho and others, come in with, say, textiles or agricultural produce, or, you know, one or two things that they are selling in the United States. We in South Africa are selling a raft of things, and we are getting a huge amount out of PEPFAR, and we have perfectly entitled to it. But there's a feeling within Washington that we're just getting too much, and that they should make a special case of us. Thus far, we've avoided it. But it is possible that now, that with this new static in the air, they might say, okay, well, we're going to have to look again at AGOA. Got nothing to do with the ship loading up in Simonstown, but the fact that you're actually getting too much out of it, and it's not fair.
Weirdly, the Americans have also said recently, I think in the past day or so, why doesn't South Africa use its influence on Russia to get them to stop expanding nuclear weapons, which is quite conflicting. On the one hand, they say, don't be so close to Russia. On the other hand, they're saying, use your influence over Russia. What is our influence over Russia? limited.
Diplomacy is all about conflicting. The thing about diplomacy is you do not have friends, you have interests. Every time you look around, that is what you're trying to protect. And in the case of South Africa, we are members of this group called BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China. And that is a very important grouping for us. But it has proved problematical with the previous Brazilian president, you know, a man of the right. And now when we have the possibility of Vladimir Putin coming here, because we are hosting the BRICS summit in August, the possibility of him coming here for that, and it would be incumbent upon us as signatories of the Rome Treaty, and we are signatories of that. There was some nonsense about us no longer buying into it. We're signatories of it, and it would be incumbent on us to arrest him as somebody being sought by the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity. But you will recall that Omar al-Bashir arrived at our shores for an African Union summit, and which is what he loved to do, travel the world, even though there was an indictment by the International Criminal Court against him. There was an action taken to try and force us, action taken by South Africans to try and force the government to arrest him. There was a judgment by a judge, Fabricius, the name I'll remember always because I have a colleague of the same name. But he ordered that Omar al-Bashir should be held. And the next thing, the man was out of the country. And so the thing about it is, you know, it's all very well to say you should do this. But the reality is that heads of state are very, very well protected. And if there is any possibility of action being taken against them, dramatic action of this nature, they get out pretty fast. And I think the South African authorities would be happy to see them go, would rather not some sort of exchange with a president's personal bodyguard. You know, they wouldn't want that to happen. What a diplomatic incident that would make. So they'd let him go. The thing about it is, you know, we keep talking as though Vladimir Putin is going to come here. The fact is, South Africa had always managed to persuade Omar al-Bashir not to come here. But then on the one occasion, he decided to do it against our best persuasion and caused that problem for us. Now, will Vladimir Putin do the same thing? Well, we wait to see. Certainly gives me pause and gives those people in South Africa who remain as journalists, that's a dwindling number, I have to tell you, will give them something to write about.
Well, South Africa has now granted diplomatic immunity to the attendees of BRICS. Are they laying the groundwork for Putin to come by doing that? What does that allow them to do? Allow him to do?
To give visiting diplomats diplomatic immunity is not surprising. Every single diplomat in this country posted here has diplomatic immunity. So when you have an international conference, the BRICS summit, for example, or any other one, anybody attending that should have diplomatic immunity. I think this is a lot of wind without any very real substance. I see the DA, Glenys Breytenbach, is looking at doing something to try to force, and that's what they did with Omar al-Bashir, try to force the South African authorities to hold him if he comes here. But, you know, when you speak to them, nobody's going to say, oh, good luck to them. We would never do such a thing. But there's no doubt in my mind that there's no stomach for arresting Vladimir Putin if he did come to South Africa. But I do believe that the diplomats in Moscow are working very hard to say, what are we trying to do? We want to achieve something at the summit. Do we want to derail the whole thing? Or do we want to, you know, obfuscate the whole thing? By having this incident, there would be no other story outside of BRICS. And it's a development community, a development family that has many, many things that they want to get done. And if they want to do them at our summit, they would do better not to have Vladimir Putin there.
Or his double.
Yes. Well, yes. If such a person exists, eh?
There are a lot of rumors. So the Reserve Bank has warned what they call of dire consequences that the country could face due to its stance on the Russian invasion. Are sanctions really, could that really result from all of this?
Well, you know, if it's proven that we did give arms to Russia, then there would be a lot of pressure within the United States to actually sanction us. But there isn't such a thing. At the moment, there's a rather disingenuous feeling that we don't know what was loaded onto the Lady R, onto that Russian ship in Simonstown. Now, if you've been to Simonstown, from the commanding heights above it to the actual place where the ships are docked, you know, it's under camera, under guard. So it's a major, major naval base. The people there know exactly what is going on there. So when Defense Minister Thande Modisi said, we put fuck all onto that ship.
Not even a tabby.
You may be inclined to believe her, but the fact is the American ambassador, that was an interesting thing. He said he would bet his life, that's the phrase he used, that they'd loaded weapons. And then when he was summoned, a demarche was issued and he went to the Foreign Office, to the DIRCO, and he then repeated what he'd said and said that he was sorry that there'd been such a fracas about it. And my good friend there, the spokesperson, I don't know if he fully understood it, because he said, oh, the ambassador apologized unreservedly, which is absolute bollocks. He didn't apologize at all. He was very quick to say that. Now, to misrepresent what the ambassador did is further, you know, rubbing salt into the wound with the United States. You don't behave that way. Make up what didn't happen. We've behaved rather ham-fistedly. And the thing about it is sometimes you do not ascribe malice when inability and ham-fistedness is really the thing at play. And that is what I think has happened with the ambassador.
You talked about language. I mean, the language that the Defense Minister Modisi used, chappies and fuckall. I mean, how does that go down in the diplomatic community? Because I'm sure they understand it as well.
Well, yes. I mean, I think it translates fairly easily. But the fact that would raise some eyebrows. But I think there's a fairly good understanding in South Africa that phrase, certainly with the majority of South Africans, is used somewhat more liberally than it would be in sort of Anglo-Saxon English. And it means less than nothing. You know, when I mean nothing, I mean less than, you know, like we South Africans speak about now and now and just now. You know, we have confusing argo and people make jokes about it. And I think that the use of the word fuckall with majority of South Africans means absolutely nothing.
Well, do you think there's absolutely no chance that Putin is actually going to come?
I would not make predictions like that. You know, I value my credibility too much. You know, he is at the moment, he's a strange individual. I mean, he's all about restoring the might of the Soviet Empire. That's what he's about. I mean, it's alleged that he's protecting Russia, well, from Ukraine or from the possibility of NATO following the path of Napoleon and Adolf Hitler across Ukraine to the heart of the Soviet Union. I don't believe that to be the case. So he's not playing by our rules. There's no doubt about that. So he could do anything. I certainly wouldn't bet the farm against it, but I wouldn't predict that he will be here.
If you look at the way this is being handled by Mr. Ramaphosa, the president, and you compare that to how President Mandela and Mbeki managed to have this position of being friendly to the West and also being friendly to Russia, why is Mr. Ramaphosa not able to negotiate it like some of these predecessors? We're not talking about Zuma. Like they did. They seem to be able to tell the West to buzz off every now and then, but still remain friendly with them and remain friendly with the other side as well.
Well, you know, I think that Cyril Ramaphosa certainly has the ability and the desire to have better relations with the two, but is he able to contain his cabinet, for example? There are elements within the cabinet who are very, very pro-Russia and very, very anti-United States. So I think if he could contain them better, we would see a better picture from them. There's no doubt that Mandela was really in bed with the United States. I mean, cabinet ministers from either side called each other by their first name, had private telephone numbers, used to relate on that level, you know, on first name terms, calling each other at all hours of the day and night. That certainly wasn't the case with Thabo Mbeki, but he was, in terms of propriety and understanding the vicissitudes of dealing with the world's last superpower, he kept relations very, very solid. Well, we don't know what Jacob Zuma did. Jacob Zuma, he took money from Russia to sign a nuclear deal. And when that was kiboshed, I don't know what whether he's had to pay the money back to Russia or what. So you know, our relations have gone up and down. But the fact is, United States, Europe, Britain, that's something like 77% of our foreign investment and trade. What Russia offers is less than many of our fellow members of SADC in terms of trade. So why would we put this very, very important relationship, financial relationship, when I speak about not friends but interests, a very important interest at stake, is mind-boggling that we should do that. Can I just tap on the United States? Whatever they do or don't do, never forget that when it came to ending apartheid, whatever storms were raised, whatever moves were made at the United Nations, where, of course, they don't like to be reminded of it, but Britain, France, and the United States cast their vetoes to protect the apartheid regime from punitive action by the Russians and the Chinese. Well, more the Russians, the Chinese would abstain. But nevertheless, but when it came to actually bringing apartheid down to its knees, it was the United States with their trade boycott and those sort of things that did it, certainly with their disinvestment by banks and the legislation they passed that way. And this is something that, again, that the ANC would do well to remember, that the real power in this regard is the United States. So you can be irritated by them, and God knows I'm often irritated by what they do. You know, how, for example, they dismiss countries that they're unable to deal with as so-called failed states. There's no failed state in the world. It's no such a thing. Some states fail at some things. In the case of the United States, you know, if you said, well, there is this country that has mass murders every couple of weeks of school children and innocent people, and you never call that a failed state because that country is the United States. They call Africans and Asians and South Americans that they can't deal with failed states. They do it incorrectly and with malice. So, I, you know, God knows, as I say, there's enough for me to get irritated about, but I do recognize the importance of this country to us. And you don't want to, you know, people often say, don't poke the bear, don't irritate Russia. I say, don't put your finger in the eye of the American eagle, because that's going to cause you a great deal more trouble.
Great saying there. So also the other problem is, and we talked about Mandela and Mbeki and how South Africa was perceived then. South Africa, as you said very early on, had the moral high ground. Isn't that the real problem, that the ANC doesn't realize they have no moral high ground at the moment?
I think they realize that. You know, they really do, that they have blown that part of it. Once upon a time, I mentioned when everybody wanted to be our friend in those days, you know, and for example, the Irish came to consult with Nelson Mandela and others about the Good Friday Agreement and working out to deal with the Irish troubles, because they saw what we had done. And others approached us in Chile, for example. You know, we were the country that had got it right in a time of the world where not many were getting it right. But having done that, we've let it slip away through corruption and inefficiency and poor governance. And so, you know, once upon a time, I was speaking to Justice Malala today, who's just written a book. And, you know, I know he said, why is it that as a South African, he lives in New York at the moment, I'm having to defend the country all the time, you know, and how irritating he finds it. The fact is, I can remember that same feeling being in New York at the time of the apartheid regime and living in London at the time of the apartheid regime. Linda, I didn't want to go to parties or to a pub Because the moment somebody heard my accent, they said, ah, you are from South Africa. What are you doing about, you know, what's happening in Soweto? And eventually, I mean, I would argue the case and put the toss. So please, I'm not supporting it, but this is what I'm doing. And finally, I said to my wife, you know, I'm just tired. I'd love to go out for an evening where we don't have to defend or don't have to explain where we are and what we are about. Let's just be ordinary people. And sadly, there was a period under Mandela where it was like you'd won the lottery, you know. I mean, I traveled through the United States with a group from 30 different countries. And I remember feeling absolutely over the moon in being able to say, this is what we had done. And I, with other countries having problems, the Soviet Union was coming apart, saying to people sort of avuncular, restorative things like, please don't worry. It may seem too much for you now, but I'll tell you what I have come from and what has happened in my country gives me faith to say to you, keep going, because everything will work out. Well, right now, I wouldn't be able to say that.
Are we the skunk of the world again?
The skunk of the Maison van die Wereld. I remember the book. Yes, I suppose that to some extent, you know. One of the questions today was from a black South African, the apartheid regime dismissed the ANC as a terrorist state. Would you, they asked Justice Malala, dismiss the ANC? The apartheid regime dismissed the ANC as terrorists. Would you, given what they have done with ESCOM, with the defense and moving close to Russia, would you dismiss the ANC as terrorists? Well, of course he wouldn't, but it was just interesting that you could, in a fairly polite forum, pose that kind of question without people expressing outrage and saying this is just off the wall.
Jean-Jacques Cornish, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Well, always a pleasure.